This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The Miami and Erie Canal ran from Toledo to Cincinnati, creating a water route from Lake Erie to the Ohio River, and was one of Ohio's most important canals during the mid-19th century. A recently released book details the history of the canal in photos, and joining us to take a look at some of that history and efforts to preserve it are the co-authors of Miami and Erie Canal, Nancy Gulick, who once worked boats on British canals, and Bill Aders, assistant editor of Towpaths, the Canal Society of Ohio's quarterly journal. And Nancy and Bill, thanks for being here this afternoon.
Well, thank you for having us here.
You can join the conversation, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Nancy, why did you decide to, with Bill, to create this book about the Miami and Erie Canal?
Well, the guys were, the guys were talking about needing this book. I guess Arcadia Publishing had actually asked us to write these books. They were talking about it, and I said, I'm in too. Because it was just something I really wanted to do.
And Bill, was it that passion that brought you into doing this as well?
Yeah, pretty much so, yes.
Okay. This was Ohio's first transportation system. So what's the story of how the canals got started, Bill?
Well, a canal was built in New York, the Erie Canal, and the governor of Ohio at that time recognized that Ohio was pretty much a rural area, and rich soil could grow a lot of crops, but they had no way of getting those crops to where it would sell. So they got funding to survey the state, and about 3 years after that, in 1825, the state did authorize the funds to build the canal.
So when did you specifically get interested in the history of the Miami and Erie Canal, Bill?
I moved out in Butler County, and I read a book on ghost towns of Ohio, many of which were canal towns, one of which was very close to where I live. I went out to see a lock, never knew what one looked like.
And you were fascinated when you saw by what you were seeing then?
Very much so, yes.
And Nancy, what about you? When did you first become interested in this particular canal?
Well, it starts way over in the UK. Some friends and I, women friends, had gone over several years in a row and rented canal boats. And these are self-drive. And you just have to work the locks. You have to walk into town for supplies. You have to clear the rudder and make sure it's working order. And we had such fun. When I came back, I talked a lot about it to friends. And they said, well, did you know there was a Canal Society of Ohio? And I said, no. But I got interested right away with them in their projects for restoring and conserving and interpreting the canals era.
So there were two major canals, Bill. There was the Miami and the Erie, and then there was the Ohio and Erie. That was the other one, correct?
Yes, sir.
And those were the first to be built, and then all the other branch canals came along later, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so the Miami and Erie, it ran down the western side of Ohio, and what communities did it touch?
Cincinnati, Lachlan, Dayton, Middletown, Toledo, Defiance, Delphus, St. Mary's. Could go on and on.
Ending up in Toledo.
How many miles? Of those were the ghost towns, too.
Yeah, and how many miles was it total?
249.
Wow. How were the canals an early example of public-private partnerships, Nancy? I mean, there was government and private entities working on these things, weren't there?
Well, no, it's primarily the state, okay. And they're still state-owned. Any remnant of those canals are state-owned. But I guess the private enterprise would be the different contractors that were contracted to dig the canal, and that would quite a few different ones. Or their different ones might be, they'll do a certain stretch of the lock, so they'll contract for that. And another contractor might contract to do the lock, a certain lock, or okay. A culvert or something like that.
Several were built privately. The state would buy stock in the company that built it. There was a canal that ran from Middletown to Lebanon, very short-lived because it never generated the business. The state bought a lot of stock in it, so they would have the funding to build it. unfortunately, it was never as successful as the Miami and Erie.
Well, tell me about the men who built the canals.
Irish and German immigrants, for the most part. Some stretches of the excavation were done by the farmers that lived around there. Mm-hmm. Mostly they were laborers brought in from the East.
The art of canal building was actually one of the first aspects of engineering in the United States. They had so many problems to solve, to get a level waterway of any kind and to build the locks and so forth. So they got some help from the British, who have built many locks previously. But they had to solve a lot of problems.
Well, speaking of problems, Brian sent us a question via Facebook, and he says, it seems I read a long time ago where the route of the canal was from the Ohio and then kind of following where Eggleston is now to where Central Parkway is now and then on and on. And his question is, if this is true, how did they get the water to flow? And I think we've started to touch on this with the word lock. How did they get the water to flow uphill from the Ohio? Because that grade from Eggleston, it's not that steep, but it does rise. So what was the engineering that made that possible?
Well, for one thing, the water would be flowing down, mm-hmm. taking the boat down, and then it would be replaced by water higher and at a higher level. And there were 10 locks, and they were given up very soon because it took so long to go through 10 locks that they finally decided that they would unload the boats at the top of the hill, just about where Cheapside is now, and then bring the product or the commercial products or whatever they were down to the boats that were waiting in the river. So those 10 locks, we don't find a sign of them really now except for levels. You can actually go down and you'll find a place where the lock was, then you go down a little bit further. So it's about 100 feet?
Yes.
Wasn't it? Yeah.
So Bill, when we talk about these canals, how big were they? How deep were they? How wide were they? Did they use stones to construct them on the sides? How were they made?
Unless you were in an urban area, it was just a clay-lined ditch. The minimum dimension from Dayton to Cincinnati was 40 feet wide at the water line, 4 feet deep, and it was a prism shape, so the bottom of the ditch would have been about 30 feet. Would allow two boats to go in opposite directions.
What kind of boats were they using on the canals?
It was a animal-towed barge, basically.
Okay. Did they ever advance beyond animal-towed?
Well, yes. In the 1880s, some boats used steam.
That was a long time into the canal's history,
yes.
though.
I mean, in the early 20th century, they even had gasoline engines, inboard engines.
They were restricted on how fast you can go, because if you make a wake, you're actually washing out the banks, which could actually leak if you washed out the bank and wash all that stuff into the canal itself, and you know you'd have to dredge it again. So they were restricted to pretty much 4 miles an hour.
4 miles an hour.
Yes, even at the 4 foot depth in a fully loaded boat, there may only have been a 1 foot of clearance. So if it did silt up, cause problems.
Now, Bill, was it dangerous work constructing these canals?
From a disease standpoint, yes. They say there's a dead Irishman for every mile of the route.
And you just get buried right alongside the towpath.
Oh, but disease was the biggest problem,
yes.
More than anything else. Interesting.
Typhoid, malaria.
Okay. Now, did the canals ever flood, or did the lock system take care of that, Nancy?
No, they did flood. And, of course, that was what was the total demise of the canal system. At one point, the flood was so bad, it was useless to try to repair everything. But the locks would control, at every place there was a lock, there was also a little wasteway alongside of it that if the canal was getting too full, it could be drained off to a lower level. And then there were also
regulating weirs that would dump excess water into a parallel waterway, you know, like the Great Miami River or creeks.
What were some of the other difficulties they faced? We know disease was a problem, and that was one of the hazards. What were some of the other difficulties they faced in building the house?
It was very forested. They had to remove trees, scrubs, shrubs, and that manually or with the help of oxen.
Okay. So the land was unrefined and it was difficult to work with?
Correct.
Okay. 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. And let's talk with Scott in Anderson. Good afternoon, Scott. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi, how are you?
Great topic. Thank you.
I drive a lot of back roads, and about 10 years ago, I stopped at a place that was actually a little difficult to find, but it was north of Piqua, Ohio. And I believe it's a place where there was kind of the largest elevation change. In the lock system, and I think the town was called Lockington, but there are a series of locks over a mile and a half, I think, that kind of dealt with that elevation change. Do you know about that? Any information on that?
Oh, sure, we do know about that.
Yeah, and I think you have pictures of Lockington in the book, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, though.
Well, there are five locks. Counting the one
five on the one side, one across the creek.
Right, and there was an aqueduct there that would take the canal across. They go through the locks and then across the aqueduct over the Loramie Creek, right?
Yes.
And it's still called Lockington, although you go there, and the counties have taken pretty good care of them. In fact, they just recently did a multi-million dollar grant to stabilize the first lock. So they're there to be seen, and they're very accessible. I'm glad you found it.
It's an impressive structure. Just the work that went into that, just unbelievable.
Yeah, the stones are beautiful.
It's worth a visit.
Scott, thank you for the phone call. We appreciate it. 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. Sounds like the engineering was pretty amazing for the time, wasn't it?
Oh, very much. At the time they built those locks, in 1830s dollars, they were probably $6,000-$7,000 a piece. The one they rebuilt with the Clean Ohio funds was over $1 million to disassemble and reassemble.
So how did you put the book together? What were some of the sources that you used? Where'd you get all the pictures? I mean, it's an amazing book, Bill.
Oh, the Canal Society archives. I went around to different historical societies. Even the Middletown Museum provided many of them.
Now, one of the pictures that I thought was interesting, you have pictures of, there are actually several of these, I think, in the book. You have pictures of people swimming in the Miami and Erie Canal. And one of them is the Wade Street Bridge and over the Rhine. Was canal swimming a popular thing to do back in those?
It was popular in Cincinnati. Illegal.
Yeah, right.
So what did the police would come down and round you up if they caught you?
Yes.
They said they would take those kids wet and dripping to the police station, and their mothers had to come and get them.
Was Cincinnati the only place where it was illegal, or was it illegal all along
some of the other urban areas? Yes. The water was very polluted.
Yeah, so it wasn't a good idea to go in the canal in the first place.
If that kid had a scratch on him, the good chance they'd get an infection.
But they were daredevils, and girls too. And actually, William Howard Taft was one of the swimmers as a young boy. And boys and girls would both enjoy, they're called Playmates of the Towpath, which is a published book by the Time Star.
I believe it was
Time Star Reporter in 1929. But those kids would do things. They'd jump off the top of the bridge onto the boat that was passing below.
Typical kids.
That's what made it illegal, not only for possible deaths and so forth, but it slowed down traffic. You know, these guys had to get these kids off the boat. Some kids would even do, on a dare, would try to swim under the boat as it goes past. And Bill just said that there's about a foot clearance underneath the boat that's loaded coming down the canal, and the kid would take a dare to swim under the boat and emerge hopefully, on the other side.
I guess kids haven't changed too much over the years.
No, like a dare.
In those days, though, it was canal boats.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do we know if William Howard Taft was ever arrested for swimming in the canal?
Probably not. Probably the police knew who he was.
Left him alone. 513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk with Ben in Westchester. Good afternoon, Ben. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I have first a comment and then a question related to the comment. Every year, the Westchester Historical Society does digs along the...
I participate in that.
Yeah, Bill does that.
Oh, do you? Awesome. Great. Last year we did an excavation involving a ice house, and I know that there was a number of these situated along the canal, but I was curious as to what other types of businesses would have been situated along the canal besides just the ice house.
Oh, paper mills, flour mills, you name it, any kind of mill that they would use the water power to power the mill.
Any place there was a lock, there is usually a rush of water going down the wasteway that could be diverted into a factory of some sort. In Lockland, of course, there were four locks, and there were lots of paper mills along there diverting some of that water through their mills.
Well, Lockland, probably about seven or eight mills,
mm-hmm.
actually.
You know, it was funny when I was reading the book, it never had dawned on me in my entire life why Lockland was called Lockland. So I looked at your book and I went, oh, okay.
Right.
That's why the canyon's there.
Yeah. You drive
southbound.
Down 75, go south and...
Oh, interesting, because the split and the whole
uh-huh.
canyon thing
and
is...
you can see in the walls, every place there is a dip is where a lock was. So, this guy was just talking about... What was he just talking
The Cullen
Ice
House.
Oh, the Cullen Ice
yeah.
House, yes. And... the foundation of the ice house are still there, which are wonderful. So they hope to find lots of other artifacts. And I hope the dig will continue.
We've dug up enough nails there to rebuild the barn.
Ben, thank you for the phone call. We appreciate it. Let's talk with Tom in Lebanon. Good afternoon, Tom. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Oh, thank you. I was just wondering, were the fees paid and set by the state or a private canal company? How many years did it take the canal to be profitable? How long did the profitability last with the railroad coming on board? I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, thank you, Tom. So the profitability of the canal system?
It never directly paid for itself. The property values along the canal's routes vastly increased. The population vastly increased. The state got what they wanted out of their investment. The Miami and Erie cost about $8 million. Through bond issue after bond issue, everything was paid off around 1903.
Did they ever do tolling along the Miami
yes,
and Erie Canal?
Yes, there was, 12 collectors?
Along ours.
Yeah, Cincinnati and Lachlan each had a collection.
And they actually, the investors who would be the people who'd be buying the bonds and so forth, were actually got something like 15% return on their investment. So they made out.
That sounds like it. I'd like to find something that paid 15% return nowadays.
Exactly.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Eddie called and he wanted to know where were the canal boats made and are there any of them still in existence?
There was a large boat building operation in Lachlan. They had a dry dock there for repair, and they built boats.
Okay. Let's talk to Richard in Westchester. Good afternoon, Richard. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Good afternoon, everybody. Yes, I thought your listeners would be interested in two facts up there. There is a canal boat that still exists and is pulled by a mule right in the area you've been talking about around Piqua and the Johnson Farm. So we did this a few years ago. Grandkids loved it. And it's pulled by a mule, like I said, and goes very slowly. So
that is a replica boat, though. That is not an original.
Yeah,
but
right.
It's designed to do that.
Yeah, and then the other thing to go to is the Johnson Farm right next door. It was equally interesting.
Right, they've
and
got
the Buckeye Trail runs through there too, which runs around the whole state, about 1,400 miles, but the miles, one of the most scenic sections runs right along that canal. And that's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you. We appreciate the call. Do any original boats still exist anywhere?
Pieces.
There is one, the Troy Bell. It was a recreational boat, but it's sitting at a pond in right outside of Piqua. There are efforts currently going on to try and restore it and put it on display at the Johnson Farm.
Hmm. Now, go ahead, Nancy.
Well, that when they mentioned the Johnson Farm and the fact that you could experience a canal boat ride there, in the whole state, there's about four different places on the canals that you can go and have that experience. And on our side of the state, it's at the Johnson Farm, which is the Piqua Historic Area, as well as up near Toledo, there's a Providence Park. What is it?
Providence Park. It's
Providence
across
Park.
The
it's a metro park
from
Toledo.
Grand Rapids.
And the other thing is that he mentioned the trails that sort of link up with some Topaz. So that's why we would like very much that the Topaz would remain intact in some way or form, because forms of recreation now. I mean, you can get on a protected walkway and walk for, 20, 30, 40 miles, which you uninterrupted by traffic and having to deal with that. So that's one reason we like it.
Yeah, there's a 3-mile stretch of it by that Cullen Ice Barn. It's paved, bike or hike.
You know, there's also a photo in your book where it's looking down Central Parkway. And in fact, you can see the building that used to be on our site.
Yes.
and you can see farther down, you can see City Hall. And mm-hmm. how much of the city was the canal touching?
I mean, within the city limits?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it came right down I-75 until Central Parkway, of course, was the canal. In fact, there are pictures in the book that show the subway being laid right in the canal bed, especially in that area you're talking about, right downtown. It came down past Music Hall, and it turned at Plum Street Bend and headed down toward County Courthouse. And then it made an extreme right to go down Eggleston into the river. So it was a good portion. In fact, if you drive up Central Parkway, there's a lot of curves there. And I said, just close your eyes and imagine that's the same curves, went around the same hills as the canal did.
Let's talk to Deborah and Anderson. Good afternoon, Deborah. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi there. I was intrigued by the comment about how the canal never really did pay for itself, and how there was such an economic boom, however, of companies and people and manufacturing and things that grew up along the canal. And I find that parallel here with something going on now called the streetcar, and people are so concerned that the streetcar may not pay for itself, but there will, and there already is, a huge economic impact by having it. And I just I'll go off the air and see if anybody else finds that parallel there too. Thank you.
Well, there's definitely a parallel. Remains to be seen.
So the case was things boomed along the canal, but the canal never really
directly. No.
Okay.
No.
Well, I think it more or less paid for itself. I mean, that's. I think they figured at the end they didn't lose a lot of money. Now they were in the right area. The Erie Canal was the first canal to really catch people's attention, and then so we were actually very next canal, and we had no trouble selling the bonds and so forth that we needed to do that. You didn't have to go out pounding on doors. Further west of us, our bordering state of Indiana had a hard time. Because by that time, trains were coming out, too. So they had a...
And that's what led to the demise of the canal system, right. Was trains were next.
Mm-hmm.
When did the canal system finally end in Ohio, or the canal era?
Officially, was it 1825 or 1925?
Mm-hmm.
Lasted that long?
Mm-hmm.
They collected tolls, actually, in Cincinnati up until about 1919. They were the last... The stretch of canal between Cincinnati and Dayton was the most viable at the end.
Thank you both for joining me this afternoon. Co-authors of the Miami and Erie Canal, Nancy Gulick, who once worked boats on the British canals, Bill Aders, assistant editor of Towpaths, the Canal Society of Ohio's quarterly journal. And thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. The technical director was Bruce Ellis. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next on 91.7 WVXU.